Good afternoon, and welcome to the Friday, April 1st, 2022 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call. Voting will commence now. Chair Dowdy.
Present.
Representative Sandstead.
Present.
Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha is excused. Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damith.
Present.
Representative Dravkowski is excused. Representative Erickson.
Erickson present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller present.
Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson.
Mr. Lee, I see her on the, here she comes again. One moment.
I can come back. Representative Thompson.
Thompson present.
Representative Walgamott.
Representative Walgamott present.
Representative Shung. Representative Shung, one more time.
Present.
Present. Representative Joachim.
Joachim present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
All right, Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
Excellent. Thank you all. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Daniels, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Thursday, March 31st meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval of the same?
I have read the minutes, Mr. Chair, and I approve the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Daniels. Members, any discussion to the Daniels motion? Seeing none, members, this is a voice vote. If you'd please unmute. All in favor of the Daniels motion approving the minutes from March 31st, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Daniels. Members, our first bill for today is House File 4570 from Representative Pinto. It's our intention to lay this bill over by 4:30. Representative Jordan, would you like to make a motion to move House File 4570 before the committee and delay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Chair Pinto, before you introduce your bill, I understand that you have an amendment you'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape you'd prefer. The chair moves.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I apologize.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Pardon me.
Thank you. The chair will move the A3 amendment to be before the committee to put the bill in the shape that the author desires. Chair Pinto, would you please describe the A3 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A3 amendment catches the language of the bill up to the spreadsheet the members have before them. This provision related to developmental screening aid in the A3 is actually in the Early Child Committee's jurisdiction, but the spreadsheet reflects that it is moving along, and so we want to make sure that the language catches up and do it that way. So I appreciate member support.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Members, this is a voice vote. You'd please unmute. All in favor of the chair's motion approving the A3 amendment to get the bill in the order that Chair Pinto wishes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Chair Pinto, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for making time late on a Friday afternoon after an extremely busy week, I know. House File 4570 contains a budget proposal relating to preschool education. It comes out of the Early Childhood Committee. I should note that our committee has, committee that I chair, has spent a lot of time and energy examining the earliest years as this committee as well. And put together a budget proposal that does have a connection with the general education formula, which is why we've sent it over to your committee and would ask for its inclusion in your budget proposal when that does roll out. The bill, as I say, contains both funding through the formula for a school-based preschool. It also contains an appropriation for preschool Head Start and at licensed childcare programs. There are a number of other aspects of it, but what I might ask Mr. Chair at this point is to have Ms. Mock from House Research walk through the bill and have Ms. Becko describe the fiscal aspects, and then we can have testifiers, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Certainly, Chair Pinto. Ms. Mock, if you'd be so good as to walk through the bill, and then Ms. Becko, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to walk through House File 4570, the first engrossment. I'm going to ignore the A3 amendment for the moment. So this bill has provisions that establish a new voluntary pre-kindergarten program for eligible four-year-olds. So the first two sections of the bill make conforming changes related to the establishment of the new program. Section 3 is where the new program is established, and Subdivision 1 of Section 3 allows a school district, a charter school, a licensed child care center, a licensed family child care provider, or a Head Start agency that meets specified requirements to establish one of these new voluntary pre-kindergarten programs. Subdivision 1A defines a lead teacher as an individual with the primary responsibility for children in a VPK classroom, and provides that lead teacher is a teacher for specified employment, tenure, and bargaining unit purposes. Subdivision 2 specifies the requirements with which the VPK programs need to comply. Many of the requirements are the ones that are currently in effect for the current voluntary pre-kindergarten program, but there are a few new requirements. And those new requirements include providing at least 850 hours of instruction each year. There's a requirement to pay salaries that are equivalent to the salaries for public elementary school staff who have similar credentials and experience. And there's also a requirement that the lead teacher has to have at least a bachelor's degree no later than July 1st of 2028, but also provides that teachers who are currently working in the field or who have been employed for 3 of the last 5 years may be also employed as a lead teacher even if they don't have a bachelor's degree. Subdivision 3 requires that the school districts and charter schools that have voluntary pre-kindergarten programs requires that they annually submit to MDE a mixed delivery program plan that ensures program alignment among all of the different VPK program providers within the school district boundaries. Subdivision 3A describes how the funding works. So school districts and charter school programs are funded based on the number of eligible students enrolled. And then the Head Start and licensed childcare programs receive $11,000 per year per eligible student. This subdivision also directs MDE to establish a process for allocating VPK seats among the Head Start and childcare programs. In Subdivision 4, an eligible child for purposes of this program is defined as a child who is 4 years old and meets one or more of the specified criteria. And this subdivision also provides that a child who does not meet the definition of eligible child may participate in a VPK classroom and may be charged a sliding fee for that participation. This bill repeals subdivisions 5 and 6. And then subdivision 7 describes accounting procedures that the VPK programs must follow. So sections 4 through 6 of the bill all make conforming changes related to the new VPK program. Section 7 allows MDE in fiscal year 2023 only to allocate early learning scholarship money to Head Start programs and child care programs to implement the VPK program. Section 8 provides that fiscal year 2023 serves as a transition year for the current VPK programs, School Readiness Plus programs, and Pathway 2 scholarship programs to transition to the new VPK program. Section 9 appropriates $96.9 million in fiscal year 2023 to MDE for the VPK program for the Head Start and child care programs that participate. Section 10 repeals, and Section 10 is the final section that repeals two of the subdivisions of the VPK statute that I mentioned earlier. And that's the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. Ms. Beckel, if you could help us with the spreadsheet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, allow me to share my screen.
Please.
Okay, so this spreadsheet shows the voluntary pre-kindergarten proposal in 4570. The top of the spreadsheet, so lines 2 through 9, you don't need to pay too close attention to if you don't wish. These are all just formula-based items that are based off of the number of additional children that would be served and that funding through the formula. So additional formula funding through this program on line 10 would be $73.342 million in fiscal year 23, $105.375 million in fiscal year 24, and $109.317 million in fiscal year 25. Looking at items that are not formula-based, on line 13, this bill appropriates money to the Department of Education for administering the whole program. And this amount in fiscal year 23 is $2.584 million, in 24, $2.674 million, and in 25, $2.784 million. On line 14, this is the item that the committee just amended on the developmental screening aid. The reimbursement for the developmental screening aid is increased in that amendment. And so in fiscal year 2023, the increase in funding would be $977,000, and then an increase of $2.09 million in the TAILS. Line 15 is the overarching concept for lines 16, 17, and 18. So this is that mixed delivery appropriation that you see in the bill of $96.92 million ongoing. And the department estimates that Head Start would receive $47.278 million ongoing. The Licensed Center and Family Child Care programs would receive $47.278 million ongoing. And then the department would use $2.364 million ongoing for distribution of the funds to the Head Start and Licensed Center and Family Child Care Centers. Then, as Ms. Mock mentioned, on line 23, some pre-existing funding for Pathway 2 would be reallocated to this program. And so you can see the amount reallocated here. So the total increased cost of this program, the total change, would be $155 million in fiscal year 23, and then $185 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. And that is the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. Chair Pinto, I understand that two testifiers have signed up to testify on your bill, Commissioner Mueller and Assistant Commissioner Burnham. So Commissioner Mueller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. I understand that both of you have been allotted 3 minutes for your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Heather Mueller, Commissioner of Education. I want to thank Chair Pinto for bringing this proposal forward and thank this committee for the opportunity to provide some brief remarks in support of its establishment of a targeted pre-kindergarten program that can serve up to 23,000 four-year-olds. This multi-pronged pre-kindergarten program is a critical component of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's Due North Plan. Robust programming for early childhood are crucial to support so many of the other proposals that are in the Due North Plan that are in front of this committee. To be clear, the pre-kindergarten proposal is just one of those early learning childhood building blocks. Setting our students up for success starts early, and a wide range of research shows how critically important the early years are to setting a child up for positive academic, social, emotional, and behavioral outcomes later. Our current pre-kindergarten system can be improved from what can and at times be a disjointed system based on differing funds and program requirements. This bill makes the bold investment in a robust statewide mixed delivery pre-kindergarten program coupled with funding for your youngest children to also access high quality learning opportunities. Because the research is clear about these impacts, it is incumbent on us to ensure that all children have access and can participate in early learning opportunities. This proposal effectively pairs existing funding and infrastructure with new funding and partners to deliver high-quality pre-kindergarten programming to the most in-need four-year-olds in settings best tailored to the community. This mixed delivery model allows for Head Start, child care centers, and family-based providers to directly receive funding to deliver this program to expand opportunities statewide and better meet families where they are. The program parameters also maintain the high-quality components of a public pre-kindergarten program, regardless of setting. Again, thank you, Chair Pinto, for carrying this proposal forward. Mr. Chair, my colleague, Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham, can now walk the committee through the detailed parts of the pre-kindergarten proposal.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Commissioner. Assistant Commissioner Burnham, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and I understand you have a presentation to review for the committee.
I do. Thank you, Chair Dabney and Representative Pinto. We are going to be sharing our screen. I just have a few slides to provide some detail on our voluntary pre-K program. Our targeted mixed delivery pre-K program not a new program. It is a program. Next slide or next couple slides, please. Our 10 commitments to equity. Here we go. Our targeted mixed delivery pre-kindergarten program is taking the three existing pre-K programs, including voluntary pre-K, School Readiness Plus, and our Pathway to Scholarship program, and integrating them into one program in order to simplify the administration and implementation and monitoring of these programs. It will be a full-day state-funded pre-kindergarten program that will serve approximately 23,000 of our most underserved four-year-olds using a mixed delivery model and leveraging the existing funding of these three programs as well as the allocation of new funds. The funding will be, as you saw in the spreadsheet, going to licensed family and center-based childcare programs, Head Start programs, and school-based programs. We also will be requiring that this pre-K program will have at least 850 hours of instruction. That is an increase in duration from the 350 hours currently required in our pre-K program. Next slide. The children who will be eligible for this program must be four by September 1st of the school year. And the eligibility criteria includes free and reduced priced meals, English language learners, children receiving ECSE services, identify as American Indian, are experiencing homelessness, are identified as having a risk that may influence learning through health and developmental screening, are in foster care, kinship care, or in need of child protection services, as well as have a parent who may be a migrant laborer or a parent who is incarcerated. Next slide, please. The requirements, as outlined earlier, we are still focused and still prioritize that pre-K is about play-based learning in order to foster whole child development. These program standards are aligned with our early learning standards in classrooms. Our ratios remain the same, 20 students per classroom with a 1-to-10 ratio. We will be requiring students be assessed and that assessment data is submitted to MDE to show the progress toward those early learning standards. We will employ a lead teacher with a bachelor's degree in early childhood related field by 2028, provide comparable salaries to those public school teachers to the extent practical, provide high quality coordinated professional development, coordinated transitions into the kindergarten, coordinate services for early childhood special ed, English language learners, homeless students, and coordinate with other relevant community-based services. Our mixed delivery plan will require that all programs receiving state pre-K funding will partner to develop and submit a mixed delivery plan. And in that plan will be details on how the programs will work together to coordinate outreach and enrollment, offer joint professional development, support coordinated services, and administer the child assessments, collect the data, and submit the data. The funding, as outlined on the spreadsheet earlier, will be general education funding for the school-based programs and dedicated funding streams for approximately 4,300 slots for each licensed childcare programs and Head Starts, with an individual per pupil rate of 11,000 per slot to be distributed by the department or a third-party administrator. And with that, Chair Dabney, are the details of our voluntary pre-K program for four-year-olds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Assistant Commissioner Burnham. When this hearing was posted, members, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We received three requests for public testimony. First on the list is Bree Ostoff, Director of Community Education for the Farmington Area Public Schools. Ms. Ostoff, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Each of these testifiers has 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Bree Ostoff, and I serve as the Director of Community Education for the Farmington Area School District. Today, I represent the Minnesota Community Education Association in sharing our support for House File 4570. There's incredible value in streamlining the funding process and access to quality pre-kindergarten programs for eligible four-year-old children. Currently, there are three buckets of funding for these students: voluntary pre-K, VPK, school readiness, and Pathways 2, each having their own guidelines and stipulations, but successfully reaching more students when braided together. This streamlined model also allows for more collaboration between families and community partners. I would like to note that our support does come with questions and concerns about the logistics stated, and we have scheduled a meeting with the Department of Education to discuss these. Across the state, the representatives of the Community Education Association have seen the impact on students who are able to utilize a variety of pre-kindergarten programs. We understand the foundation of a child's educational path starts with pre-kindergarten programming that meets the needs of the family. We support House File 4570 and see it as a way to grow the capacity and quality of programming in our youngest learners. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ostoff. Next, Craig Gratke, Executive Director of the Minnesota Head Start Association. Mr. Gratke, welcome to the committee, or welcome back. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Dabney and Chair Pinto. My name is Craig Gratke. I'm the director of the executive director of the Minnesota Head Start Association. And I would really just like to say I appreciate the investment in our youngest children in Minnesota, and really appreciate the form that this bill has taken. It aligns very much with what we do in Head Start, and will expand services to many of our neediest children. I appreciate the year of planning, because we'll have some shuffling we'll have to do, which will allow us probably to serve more early Head Start children as we take up some of that preschool space. We do have some questions too along with this. As you know, our Head Start world is a little bit different. We look at full day, full year programming, or not full year programming, but full day programming as about 1,020 hours, not 850. So we would like the flexibility to build up to that, to scale up to that, which we don't think is going to be a problem at all. In the realm of teachers, really, I appreciate, again, out to 2028, want to make sure that we can recruit and train culturally diverse and linguistically appropriate staff for our students in our most diverse communities. Outside of that, I think that ensuring that we have a good system of bringing kids in and making sure that they get to the right places to get services will be essential in moving forward. And we also have had some discussions with the Minnesota Department of Ed on how to move forward and looking at the cost per child, those kinds of things that fits kind of already what we have set up as far as our state funding. So again, really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today and really appreciate the additional funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grafty. Mr. Heller, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Can I be heard right now?
Yes, you can, sir.
Okay, thank you. Hi, my name is Rick Heller. I unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional and Print Disabled. I ask that the agenda would reflect that. It does not. I've been doing this unofficially for a few
weeks. Certainly.
Secondly, regarding the bill today, it mentions, I believe, on line 2-something. I don't have it in front of me. I do, but anyways, I'm going to talk off the cuff here. I'm a white male with a baseball cap on that's camouflage. I'm over at age 60 with a beard. I just like to describe to the audience, since I don't have my picture there, I think it's a service I can provide to the people. Regarding the Twice Exceptional, it's just something about people that don't have a disability. However, Twice Exceptional has yet to been defined in Minnesota Statute 120B15. In 2015, they put minorities, English as a second language, economic disadvantage, and then the lingual word currently Twice Exceptional. The bill may skirt the idea that they're even your spreadsheet was not fully accessible, by the way. I don't know if anybody manually checks those, but they, with the PDF portal document formats, it's not accessible with that type of screen reader. Since your staff created it, I ask that you manually check your documents in the future. Anyway, I was getting back to that spreadsheet. It mentioned special ed, but it doesn't mention Twice Exceptional. It doesn't break that down, because now we have in the statutes in 2015, but here we are resetting Race to the Top funding that came from the federal government to create that $47 million for that pilot program to identify early every kid that's school ready. I think that's what's going on here. There's a shift going on. That federal funding dried up. Now we're going to continue this voluntary kindergarten thing, but we have yet to define Twice Exceptional, not only in your spreadsheets, but for the public at large. And don't we have a service to treat them the same way we'd want to be treated? We all know that your DISC doesn't define you, but your ability likely would. So my suggestion to the chair, Dabney is the chair, and Pinto, that he be willing to orally amend the bill to create Twice Exceptional, put Minnesota Statute 120B15 in there, because at least we're going to identify, as we work on voluntary kindergarten regarding developmental, that they want to identify these kids that are gifted and talented, because Twice Exceptional are found with the kids with a gift or talent or both, but also have a DISC on their ability. So in a way, it's hidden. So it's my suggestion through the chair, if Dave Pinto is willing to amend or consider amending that at this meeting, to put Minnesota Statute 120B in there, 15, because they're not only they gifted, but they're also found with a DISC on their ability.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. We can consider that as if the bill moves forward. Members, questions? Representative Joachim.
I just have to say that I'm excited for this proposal. I'm excited for the stability that it brings to our programs. Not only is it investing in up to 23,000 students that are underserved, but by braiding the programs together, it creates stability so that it can reach all other children on the sliding fee scale too. But you have to have the programs there for people to access them. So I'm just really excited about that and the way you structured it. I like the mixed method approach, and wondering, the only question I have, since we are pushing this into full day, which I think is wonderful, since we're reaching a population that's underserved already, one thing I do worry about, and this can be a discussion for the future, let's like get this started, but either sliding fee scale before and after school and transportation in particular. But the before and after school care piece of it as well, since the school day is shorter than most people's work days, and that transportation in between a possible before and after child care can be really difficult for some families. So just something to think about as we move forward with this, but just thank you for all your work in this arena and the impact that this can make.
Representative Pinto, response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Joachim. Thanks so much. I guess what I want to make sure that we recognize is, just because I know members of this committee have not had the benefit of seeing this in what we've seen in our committee, is just how deeply underfunded and challenged the system is. And so I really would agree with you, Representative Joachim. We want to be keeping an eye on after-school care and before care and filling in all those gaps. Right now, we have this massive gap of having, you know, four-year-olds not receiving the preschool enrichment that they need. And so I really appreciate you pointing this out. And sort of this is a good opportunity for me to just point out to committee members that there is so much further that we need to go. And I'm excited by the big step that we'll be able to take in advancing this. So thanks again.
Representative Joachim, any follow-up?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you. That's just something, if I had a magic wand, not only would I invest more in this, I would also invest more, you know, and I know you have, in the birth to three and making sure our providers are getting quality pay, but then also having that transportation and the sliding fee scale, because before and after care is really tough for parents. But this is a fantastic step. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure, maybe the bill author could answer this question, but two things. One, I'm just wondering, can we get a little more detail on the relationship between the public schools and the private providers, and how these permissions work from the Department of Education, or the allowing private providers to gain funding, and just how will that relationship look? How will it work? Chair Pinto, I don't know if that's something you want to get at, or...
Mr. Chair, with your permission, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bennett. I actually really appreciate you raising that, because I think that there has been some confusion about this. There may have been sort of earlier drafts of this proposal floating around that had different things. So, and I'll ask in a second our MDE folks to step in, but I want to make clear that it is my understanding that the portion of this bill, the portion of the program that is direct appropriation, flows through MDE. It is not the case that local school districts are deciding who in their community get the money. There is a coordination in terms of the program coordination. We want to make sure that there's some connection there. We're having a comparable standards. But otherwise, this is not the case that there's some sort of local door that has to be passed through. But perhaps Commissioner Burnham, Mr. Chair, could provide more detail in response to the question.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Pinto. You are absolutely right. The school districts will be one of a partner in a mixed delivery. They are not controlling the funds behind this. And it will be administered very similar to how the current Pathway 2 program is currently administered. We have a third party fiscal host. And so we work with school-based programs, childcare, and Head Start as they administer Pathway 2. So this is envisioned very much like the Pathway 2 program. The piece that we're really excited about is really truly having an intentional effort to create a true mixed delivery system in the state of Minnesota. So it's really getting our school-based programs partnering with our Head Start, which in many places they already do, as well as with childcare, and in some places they already do that. So it's really an intentional effort through this voluntary pre-K program to be very consistent with our expectations and our level of quality programming and evidence-based practices, and collecting the data we need to help decision makers, help school leaders know the impact that this programming and funding is having on our state. So it's really an exciting effort to have these three different program models really truly partner and build those bridges to serve our four-year-olds in the state.
Assistant Commissioner Burnham, if I may, Am I correct that in other areas of the country where similar, at least, programs have been implemented, that it's served also to strengthen the capacity of the private providers and then also better orient the curriculum choices and the like of those private providers to the kindergarten expectations of the children?
Chair Devaney, that is absolutely correct. So many states, you know, for Minnesota, we tried to model our program development from the Build Back Better plan, just in case that were ever to get passed. But it also allowed us to really be thoughtful about looking at what other states are doing. Many states are going down this route of this mixed delivery system and requiring, such as we are, that 30%, 30%, and 40% allocation of funds so that there is a balance of program for families to choose from, given whatever their community needs are. You know, there may be a community that's really strong in the licensed family childcare, and so there's going to be four-year-olds served there than potentially the school district, or vice versa. It just really depends on what the best fit is for each community, but there's definitely a choice there, as there is in a Pathway 2 scholarship program right now, for a family to choose where they want to send their four-year-old, school-based, childcare, or Head Start. But whatever choice they make, they're going to know they get this common, consistent set of quality and program expectations.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Representative Bennett, further question on your part.
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So I'll just throw this out, and whoever wants to answer it. If districts have capacity for four-year-olds in their community, if they have enough capacity to serve them, can private providers still compete for this funding and get funded so that they can compete for those four-year-olds? Or if the district can handle them all, is that it? I'm still confused on how that works.
Assistant Commissioner Burnham, I'm going to go back to you.
Thank you, Chair Devaney. Well, it's really not a competition. So it's really about where the family wants to send their four-year-old, because in each community, there will be an option for a school-based program, a Head Start program, and a community-based licensed family child care program. So it's not like it's not the school district's going to take the four-year-olds. It's really around where the family wants to send their four-year-old.
Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So then, final question, why aren't we just giving scholarships to the families so that they can choose which of those opportunities they want to take instead of kind of funding the programs? It seems like, Commissioner, as you said, you want to give families that choice, so why not give them the full choice by providing them with a scholarship and letting them choose which platform they would prefer?
Assistant Commissioner Burnham, is that for you?
Yes, Chair Devaney, thank you. I think what's important is consistency and coherence across programs. We want the same set of standards and high quality, assurance of high quality, wherever the four-year-old goes. And currently, with the system that we have right now with the three separate programs, we don't have that continuity or that coherence in program standards. There's a different set of program standards for each one of those three programs. So we're really looking to assure that every four-year-old in the state is guaranteed a high-quality pre-K opportunity via this program.
Representative Bennett, any follow-up?
Just a final comment. Thanks, Mr. Chair and Assistant Commissioner. Thank you for that. It just seems to me that families are the true determiner of the quality that they want. And if we put these scholarships in the hands of families, they're going to walk the direction, excuse me for my cat's echo here, they're going to walk the direction that they want to go. And they're the determiners of the quality that they want. So I do struggle with this a lot. I think the choice belongs in family hands, and they should determine what is quality for their family and their child. But I will be quiet and let other people ask questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Erickson, I have you last on the list of members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think Representative Damuth will follow me. as she is representing early childhood today. But my question is for Assistant Commissioner Burnham. So Assistant Commissioner, considering that the move is to 850 hours of instruction, my fear is that there will be a concentration on the 10 early learning indicators, and they get very much looking like kindergarten, first, second, and third grade. I've just read through them, bi-ed and movement, language, literacy and communication, math, science, social systems, approach to learning, the arts, social and emotional learning. That's probably what's going to occur during 850 hours of instruction. So in what way is that really allowing the child to grow as a child when you mentioned, or maybe the commissioner mentioned, that this is intended to be a play approach, which I know is what is stated in the department's website definition of early learning. But you know, how do you avoid not covering these indicators during 850 hours of instruction?
Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Thank you, Representative Erickson. It was me who mentioned the duration will allow every program to really look at all these different areas and address every area of a whole child. So the early childhood indicators of progress are our birth through age five standards. And so that's what these program standards are aligned to. And the very first requirement listed, I believe, in the statute is a focus on play-based learning. Yes. As a former kindergarten teacher, I know both sides of this learning continuum. I know what kids should be able to know and do coming into kindergarten. And it is around really ensuring that programs have awareness, the tools and the resources to implement and design their programming to meet these early childhood indicators of progress and the standards and the programming around evidence-based high-quality practices.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question, Assistant Commissioner Burnham, and maybe this is more for Commissioner Mueller, but I heard her say that there's an inconsistency in early learning presently, or that it's disjointed. But isn't that also true of the K-12 system? Because every district uses a different approach to teaching and learning, and every district approaches the standards differently. So why that phrase when I think it also is true of K-12?
Chair Pinto, please.
I may need to leap in as the bill author to say, Representative Erickson, I would put the disjointedness of early childhood up against the disjointedness of K-12 any day of the week. And I think Chair Dabney, serving on the Early Childhood Committee, would know what I mean in chairing this committee. There are six or seven programs that do almost exactly the same thing in early childhood. And that is not the fault of people who do the work. It's the fault of us in the legislature. And I'll just note that this is very much of a step forward in terms of streamlining programs. You'll note the commissioner identified three programs being pulled into one. I will note that there's a bunch of other things that could all be pulled together. So while it's true there are different districts throughout the state, families know that when their child reaches the age of five, thank God they can stop paying for early care and learning out of their pocket and pay 30-40% of their income, and it starts being provided by the state, recognizing the value to all of us of a child receiving an education. Wherever they live in the state, they're going to receive an education. It's going to be paid for, and they're going to have a consistent set of standards, absolutely driven by local decisions. We have local school boards, but at least it's going to have that support. And boy, until a child is five, it is complete wild, wild west. It's crazy out there. And I will say that we really experienced the harms of that. And I'll maybe note this morning, we had a joint hearing between early child and public safety, which you would not think of that link. But we heard a lot about what happens when young kids don't receive the very good start that they need in those earliest years. So my apologies, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson. You can see it sort of touched me off. Thanks.
No apology necessary, Chair Pinto. Assistant Commissioner Burnham, do you wish the opportunity to respond as well?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Representative Erickson, thank you for that question. And I did believe the commissioner mentioned, and that reference was to the three separate programs right now that are serving this four-year-old population, the School Readiness Plus, the Voluntary Pre-K, and the Pathway 2s. Those are three programs, all administered through Early Learning Services with different program requirements, administration requirements, applications. So this is what needs to happen to simplify not only the program for families, but for people who are administering it and implementing it.
The chair will observe that few things drive the public crazier than government having multiple inefficient or multiple programs that try to do the same thing, and the inefficiency and waste of tax dollars, confusion, and time that's involved with that. Representative Erickson, any further follow-up?
Well, just one comment. Sometimes we look at it as innovation, and that's why our K-12 system varies a lot, because every district is a bit more innovative maybe than another. And that's what's been happening also in early learning. So I don't see that as a downside. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Damuth, my understanding from Representative Erickson is that you were going to bat cleanup for the minority today. Representative Youakim has raised her hand again, and if it's okay with you, Representative Damuth, I'd like to go to her first.
That is fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, my true colors are coming out. I started advocacy work over a decade ago around early childhood, so I'm really passionate about this. But I am also passionate because I've spent time in kindergarten classrooms, and I actually spent time transitioning some kiddos from the early childhood special education program into our kindergarten classrooms in one of our districts. And it became very apparent, not just with kiddos in the classrooms that had quality early child care education, but for our own kids that had bigger barriers, being kiddos with special needs, actually being more prepared because they were in a quality program than some of the other children coming into the school. I know 850 hours sounds like a lot, but our kids' brains are growing so fast when they're young. And if we can help them get a good start going into kindergarten and being up to par so that they can learn better, there's studies that show kids that don't have that quality interaction coming in woefully short on things of just on knowing enough words to be able to learn when they're not getting that interaction and they're not getting that foundation. So this really, you know, making sure our kids have quality education going into kindergarten lets them hit the ground running, lets them hit those benchmarks for literacy by third grade like we want them to have, so that they can then learn, then they can then read to learn and not just learn to read. So can't say enough for a quality preschool program. And I think this will get a lot more kids off to a great start.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Representative Damuth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question, and then I will have a few comments, but either to the bill author, Chair Pinto, or to Assistant Commissioner Burnham. Talking about the funding piece, I believe I have read and heard in committee yesterday, the $11,000 per student, that's either at Head Start or at a licensed family child care or a child care. Is that correct? And could you talk a little bit about that for a moment?
Representative Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and I guess I probably will direct that to Assistant Commissioner Burnham to describe a little more about that detail.
All right, Assistant Commissioner Burnham, please.
Thank you, Chair Davney. Yes, Representative. So it is $11,000 per slot for the 4,300 slots allocated to each Head Start and license-based family child care.
Representative Damuth?
Okay, thank you. I have, working from home is interesting, and I have a dog that just unplugged everything. My apologies.
Quite all right.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Burnham. I appreciate the comments on that. You know, I have a number of concerns. We did hear this bill in early childhood, and I am an early childhood advocate. I am an education advocate, but I also will continue to support and stand for our family child care providers. And I do believe that this, as it is set, is going to disadvantage our family child care providers. I really believe that. I think we've heard testimony that supports that. I know we have a letter of testimony in our packet in today. But as I read the bill, I do see that the commissioner will determine how those slots are allocated. I do read that it is determined on the district level. Well, when parents are needing to make choices, if there is school funding, and you know, the comment was made earlier that, you know, we have a free education. It is available as a public education in our K-12, but it is not free because we are all paying for that as taxpayers. And it's an important thing. I believe in that without a doubt. My kids, I'm a product of public education. My kids are, and I believe that. But when I look at what this bill could potentially do for our family child care providers, which are a portion of that foundation. As we've heard in our workforce, you know, it's a workforce issue, it's a childcare issue, it's a child development and education issue. When I look at that, I feel that this is gonna be very damaging. The way that I would definitely like to see any dollars put into it would be into scholarships. And I know that was already mentioned, but scholarships give each family the individual decision to pick what is gonna be best for their children. That could be a school program, without a doubt. It could also be a licensed center. It could be private, and it could be a licensed family childcare. And I think we need to keep that in mind. So I don't have many more comments, Mr. Chair, just definitely some concerns. I know this is gonna be moving and changing. I've appreciated the opportunity to work with Chair Pinto on a number of early childhood things, but this bill is very concerning to me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Damon. Chair Pinto?
Thank
closing
you, Mr.
comments,
Chair.
Response?
Yeah, thank you so much, yours. Mr. Chair. Thanks for the discussion, members, and the good points. First, I want to make sure it's clear, this is alluded to earlier, I think Commissioner Mueller's comments, that, and this is unfortunate, you're really only seeing members a part of what I hope will be moving forward when it comes to early learning and care. So just because of the way our committee structures are working, this is the proposal relating to four-year-old pre-K. I'm very proud of it. And I want to note, and please keep your eyes peeled, for our broader efforts to get young kids off to a great start. Opportunity gaps do not start in the K-12 schools. I know this is a big focus of this committee. They start well before school, and they even start even before when kids are four. So we'll be focusing a lot on those infant and toddler years. And when kids are four, I think if you'd ask most Minnesotans, boy, should we have preschool for our four-year-old kids? They would say we absolutely should. And the kids in question, the 23,000 kids that we're talking about, are those who are low income and those who are particularly vulnerable, homeless or highly mobile, incarcerated parent, et cetera. Members, we have got to step up and make sure that those children have a terrific start in life. As we do that, we know that there'll be a benefit not only to them, but to all of us along the way. This is a well-balanced and really very well-constructed plan. I should know the administration had rolled this out, and I have examined it from every direction, and the members of the Early Childhood Committee have as well. And I'm really proud to be bringing it before you today and to urge that you advance it next week and beyond in your budget bill, where I know we'll then be marrying it up with other components as well. Members, it is time that we get young kids off to a great start, and this is going to be a great opportunity in doing so. And thank you so much, Chair and members, for the time this afternoon.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. With that, members, Representative Jordan renews her motion to lay over House File 4570 as amended for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, a little peer into next week. Ms. Burt will be posting our meetings for next week shortly. We anticipate having omnibus DE language available by Monday morning. At the latest for public review, I want to thank the committee staff for all the work that they've been doing and will be continuing to do to get that delete everything language out and the accompanying spreadsheet. We'll have the opportunity for public testimony on components of the bill later next week. We want a full public vetting of that language in the spreadsheet. With that, members, unless there are any other questions, we are adjourned. Thank you much.